This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about the show or would like us to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's stateoftheunion@dc37.net. This is definitely a late summer show, and no late summer show would be right without talking about some summer reading. And we just happen to have a fellow who we had on before. Mark Torres is the general counsel of Teamsters Local 810. He is also the author of, the last time he was on the show, he was talking about a book he had written called A Stirring in the North Fork, and also a children's book about the value of unions. That book is called Good Guy Jake and Buen Chico Jake. The main character of the novel Stirring in the North Fork is a character named Savoy Graves. The creator of Savoy Graves is Mark Torres, and he's on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Listen, I did not know the last time you were on, I believe it was February of last year, and we were talking about the children's book that you had written. I'd like to take a step back. You are now the general counsel of Teamsters Local 810, but you've got a long history with Local 810, and in fact, you were a shop steward there. Let's talk about your background a little bit before we
move forward. Chris. My journey with the Teamsters started way back in 1990. I was an engineer at New York University. Short time after, became a shop steward, representing all the guys in the shop. I enjoyed that representative role, and at the same time, I went back to school, put myself through school and later law school, and became an attorney and have been general counsel now with the Teamsters Local 810 for over 10 years. I've always been affectionately called a Teamster with a law degree, and I'm quite proud of that title.
Well, that's not a let's take a further step back. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I don't know, an astronaut, an athlete. I never really had visions. I just kind of went along the way. And really, my career path started at New York University. I guess you could say it was my true first job. I started as a helper, worked my way up through the ranks, learning, just watching, learning, observing, and training. Eventually became a refrigeration engineer. And you know, again, that was a career path and still is for many of the guys there today who I proudly represent. So, kind of found my way. Once I locked onto a career that I liked, I enjoyed it. Sometime later, going back to college really changed my mindset from more of a physical labor type situation to being more intellectually based. And that's when I started to go to school.
How'd you make the decision to do that? I mean, that's a big... You were doing refrigeration engineering, if I'm right, for almost 20 years.
Yeah, that's correct. It kind of fell my way. Again, working in university, I was able to get a tuition benefit, obviously a top-notch school, a worldwide school. And I just started taking classes. I kind of just wanted to see what it was about and kind of get my find my way through, you know, from writing classes to everything forward. And the deeper I went in, the more intellectually based it became. And it also tied in with my shop steward duties, because I really enjoyed representing the men and the title, and we negotiated contracts and did everything there. And that passion, along with that education, helped lead me to where I am today.
And so the union, I don't want to overstate this, but the union helped shape what you became and what you've become.
Absolutely, no doubt. It was obviously with a contract as a union member, your job security and preservation and also improvement. And also as a steward, learning the ways and of representing. You know, it was a big, it was a big part of me, although maybe it was something silent inside me all along. If I knew back then it's what I wanted to do, I would have charted it a lot sooner. But certainly it was a natural fit. My older brother is a retired policeman. He was also part of the PBA. And my other older brother was also a shop steward. So I guess it was kind of within us to want to take up the mantle and defend and represent.
Okay, now let's talk about the writing career. How did that come to happen, and why the mystery form?
Good question. I love legal writing. I love what I do. You know, people say writing as a lawyer is boring, but I love it. I love writing persuasively. But fiction gave me an outlet. It gave me a way to write and be more creative and create and become really a storyteller and just get involved in writing projects. I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to be an author. Again, much like my earlier career, I just kind of found my way into it, where I just started writing snippets, if you will, or little portions that eventually came together to form a book, which was back in 2015, Stirring in the North Fork, my debut novel.
And again, the mystery form, when did you come to the conclusion that you could do a mystery?
Well, I write what I like. I obviously love the cold case mysteries. You know, certainly on TV and the shows that are presented, that's always been a genre I've been drawn to. And I wanted to convey back to readers what my style of what I, my interest.
Let's remind readers about the book, Good Guy Jake, Buen Chico Jake. This is an interesting, you wrote a children's book about the value of unions.
Yes. 2017, Good Guy Jake was published by Hardball Press, a good friend, Tim Sheard. It's obviously that a lot of the union manuals are very dry and outdated. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're really more of a learning tools for people already in the business. But there was nothing out there that really aimed to teach very young children what we do. And I thought that's a shame, because there's a whole generation growing up whose parents are part of the labor movement, and I wanted to get them reinvigorated. So the idea for Good Guy Jake was, you have the sanitation worker. He's taking broken toys from the curb, repairing them and donating them to a children's shelter. Unfortunately, he breaks the city rule by doing that, and he's fired. Luckily, he's a union member. He files for arbitration or files a grievance, and then the union pursues arbitration in hopes of getting his job back. It's a real heartwarming story. It's bilingual. It's illustrated beautifully. And more importantly, it tells children what we do as unions, how we can help preserve not only jobs, but livelihoods.
Man, that is so great, because when I speak to folks who have been around in the union world for a long time, they are constantly bemoaning the fact that the history of unions is not taught in the schools anymore, and that you really, that there is a generation of folks who really do not understand the values and the benefits of what a union does.
And I'll tell you, Chris, not only that book was the book of the month in my kid's school, elementary school. And when I went to read it to my daughter's fifth grade class, I read the book and they all had questions. And I asked them all, I said, you believe that Jake would have gotten his job back if he wasn't in the union? And they all said no. And that was fifth grade. So I was real proud of that moment there.
That is very cool. Also, listen, in the world now in which we live, with so much popular opinion in favor of unions, nobody believes more in unions than young people, according to the polls. So
yeah, there really has been a merging of social causes with unions. For some reason, many years past, they've kind of ran a separate track, and now they've merged into a unified goal, and that's really great to see.
Okay, we're coming up to the last third of this interview. Take it away with Adeline. Tell us whatever you want to talk about in terms of
sure,
the
thanks.
Book.
Adeline was released on July 1st. It is the sequel to my first book, Stirring in the North Fork. It's about the death of a young innocent woman wrongly committed to a notorious insane asylum in Rockland County, New York in 1977. Savoy Graves, who returns to investigate this case, and he gets plunged into a dark underworld of a secret society that's hell-bent on preserving their identity at all costs. It's been receiving real positive, strong reviews. It's getting out there. One point of note, the art cover was created by my daughter, Olivia, 11 years old. She's a budding artist, and I'm always trying to promote that work. And she was able to create the artwork for that book, and it's been really a sensational hit.
How do listeners get a copy of Adeline?
Sure. Adeline is available on Amazon as well as Indie Owl Press and most bookstores, even Barnes & Noble. If you just went in there and made a request for it, they'll place an order. You'll be able to pick it up as well.
The novel is called Adeline. The author is Mark Torres. Mark Torres is the general counsel of Teamsters Local 810. He has written also a children's book about the value of unions. It is called Good Guy Jake, Wayne Chico Jake. And the two titles are because the book is in English and Spanish. And listen, we talked to you, like I say, it must have been over a year ago. And you said you were going to be writing another novel. I have to say that as someone who has aspirations of writing, how do you get time to write the books and do the law?
Great question. I you must remember when I was working full time and raising a family, I also went to law school at night. So when people ask that question, I always say writing a book is quite easy. I'm a very situational writer. I could be taking my daughter to art class for an hour and a half and waiting in the car and just start writing away. Or, you know, going shopping where I could just step out, sit in the car and write away. Or sit at a desk somewhere and just kind of plug away several hours. So it's really a matter of finding the time and making it work. And that, again, was from my law school days where I had to juggle a tremendously busy schedule. So it's really being opportunistic and situational in my writing time.
I have to tell you, when I was a younger man, I hung out at a writer's hangout in Manhattan, and it was great. Writers were interesting. The conversations were interesting. And every now and then, the writers would disappear because they'd go off and write books. And I'd sit there thinking, you know, maybe I should be an agent because the writing part of it is the hard part. The hanging out is the fun part. So
yeah, no, it's always a great journey. And that's the thing about when you write a book and you're really bearing a part of your soul to the world, saying, look, here's what was in my head and my heart and my soul when I wrote this. And, you know, take a look and hope you'll enjoy. And I got to tell you, the marketing has been great. Obviously, it's through mostly social media. The first book, Stirring in the North Fork, was pictured by readers on all seven continents within the 1 year of its release. And now I'm hoping to replicate that with Adeline. I've already got pictures from Alaska. I have some upcoming pictures from really from all over the world, and I've been blessed with readers who are helping and eager to promote.
Mark Torres, General Counsel of Teamsters Local 810, the author of Adeline, which is a sequel to A Stirring in the North Fork. He's also the author of a children's book about the value of unions called Good Guy Jake, Wayne Chico Jake. Get them all. It's summertime. We're almost up to Labor Day. It's almost time to get back to work, get some summer reading in. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. My pleasure.
We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is a late summer show. Labor Day is upon us. We have been talking over the past few months periodically with labor historian Brandon Weber, who is a friend of DC 37 and of labor people everywhere. Brandon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Thank you.
Brandon is the author of a book called Class War, which I love because it has these bites of history that are just, that, first of all, they're eye-opening. Second of all, they are easily digested. And third of all, they are stuff that can be, as far as I'm concerned, that should be taught in schools.
Yes.
Labor Day. Now, Labor Day, the rest of the world seems to, May Day in the world of labor, May Day seems to be the day, but American exceptionalism, we got Labor Day. And I'm sure we didn't do it without a struggle. That's what...
It's always about the struggle, isn't it? So 1882 is the year that Labor Day kind of got its start. There's 10,000 people that marched in New York. It was 12 to 16 hour day work days back then, and they marched to get that down to 8. Imagine, I mean, people actually fought for it back then. Now we're back the other direction, right? So they marched to New York. It was a constant every year. They tried to get it, you know, get a march going. Right around that same time period, the kind of the first weekend in September, right around then, and that kind of came to a halt. For a temporary time or in 1894 when the American Railway Union, headed by Eugene Debs, when they called a national strike and stopped the trains. I mean, they stopped trains from running. Across the country, yes. And this was after the recession of 1893, and when folks that they worked for, they trimmed back their wages and everything else. But then, you know, of course, their bills are the same. So workers got angry, and so they went on strike. And pretty soon in that strike, pretty early in that strike, 30 of them were shot dead by cops. And it got really bad. I mean, it got to a point where they were overturning, you know, they got pissed, obviously, they got angry about it. And so they overturned rail cars, they set fire to some of these buildings. In today's dollars, there was $2.5 trillion worth of damage to all of the capitalist economy. And,
wow.
And it was huge. And the main reason that Grover Cleveland put this thing down, he put it down hard, was because, guess what? They stopped the mail cars from running. And when you stop U.S. mail, I don't care what point in history, if you stop U.S. mail, then there's serious consequences. And that's exactly what happened. And so as a concession to the working class of the country, Grover Cleveland, who was a conservative Democrat at the time, I don't even know what he would be considered today, didn't want that association. He didn't want that were people to remember that 30 people were killed and there was all these, and the strike was put down. So, and because he was a conservative Democrat, he did not want the association with Haymarket or May Day. Now, I got to back up a little bit there.
Yes,
you don't mind. The Haymarket affair, the Haymarket massacre happened in Chicago, 1886. So it was right in the middle of all this, right? It was right in the middle of all these struggles. It's interesting because in history you'll see that there are periods of struggle. It's not just like this thing happened for some reason on this date. It's usually 5, 10, 15 years when people are fighting hard. They're struggling hard. And that's what was happening here. So there was another situation in Chicago where they were striking for an 8-hour day. And so the cops actually shot a couple of the strikers. I mean, can you imagine, Chris, today, like,
yeah,
at a strike in, let's say, a steel plant in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, you know, some of them being shot by cops? I mean, this happened.
The violent history of our labor past and our fight for labor rights is shocking when you think about it in terms of the lives that we live today.
It really is. And I'm not going to say we need to get back to those kinds of struggles to turn things around, but damn it, sometimes it seems that way. I don't want to see any of the violence happen either, but I think there are times in history when we need to stand up and say no more. We're not putting up with this anymore. So that's what they did. That's what the Haymarket folks did. And then very soon after, it was May 4th, yes, they gathered in the square of Chicago, and they had some speeches, and they had labor union folks talking there. And somebody, to this day, I do a chapter on this in my book, to this day, they don't know who did it, but somebody threw a bomb in the center of this mass of people, and six cops were killed. Some of the strikers were killed. And from that point on, it was all downhill. Because you know what happens. I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it many times. What happened in this situation was is that they rounded up the union leaders. They rounded up at that point, it was anarchists who were involved and some socialists. Rounded up who they could, anybody who had an independent newspaper that was not part of the corporate media in Chicago, and they tried them, basically, and sentenced a number of them to prison, and then they actually hung four of them. They hung them in Chicago.
You're saying this is years preceding this is happening in a build-up to what then took place with the railway folks. Is that
right?
Right.
So anyway, that's just the backstory to tell you that that's why the president at the time, that's why he did not want Labor Day to be May 1st, because that's an International Workers' Day. It's known in most of the world. And it is affiliated with some of the more radical parts of the labor movement in the world and political movements. And so Grover Cleveland is the one that proposed making it the day after the first Sunday in September.
Let's go back to where we were. Where we were was talking about how this day, which we now, gives us a long weekend at the end of the summer, was also born of what you've just been describing as, difficult, often violent struggle.
Yeah.
And while, again, we deplore the violence, the struggle continues. And so when we talk about the victories of this day, when we talk about the victory of getting this day and what we accomplished by getting the day, it took was it just Grover Cleveland saying, okay, we're going to make the first Monday in September Labor Day? Was it that
There were other forces at work, I mean, including the AFL. The AFL at the time, it was not the AFL-CIO, it was just the AFL, but they actually were opposed to making it around May Day because of the affiliation with the American exceptionalism. They wanted this country's version of that, but at a different time. And it kind of actually worked in, just culturally it worked out in general, because it's kind of smack dab in between, Independence Day and Thanksgiving. So it kind of worked in that regard. It's another holiday that people decided they would like, and it marks the beginning of the school year and all that kind of stuff. So the end of the summer, the unofficial end of the summer, they call it.
And when we talk about the present day, celebration and acknowledgement of it, by the way, I should point out now that DC-37 members, if you are planning to join the parade this year, you can do so by calling 212-815-1550. We will be assembling at 11 a.m. at West 48th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. How hard was it to actually have these parades and these events go smoothly back in those days?
So that's actually a good question. The marches that happened in New York, I mean, this is a time, remember, when workers didn't have rights, when there was no National Labor Relations Board, when there was nothing guaranteeing folks the right to do any of this stuff. So there were pushbacks against it. There were efforts all along the way. I mean, again, it started in 1886. So, and it took until 1894. Actually, I'm sorry, it started in 1882 and to 1894. So for 12 years, basically, there was a struggle to establish the Labor Day and have marches. I mean, I've got images of New York's Union Square in 1882 when they began these marches. They had to fight. They had to fight hard to make this a national recognition of working people, and that's what it became.
We're talking with Brandon Weber. He is the author of a book that I think more folks should know about. It is called Class War, and the subhead eludes me at the moment.
It's Class War USA, and the subtitle is Dispatches from Worker Struggles in American History. It's on all the major book suppliers.
You also have an incredible following on Facebook, my friend. I'm always impressed when there is a Brandon Weber post on Facebook and suddenly, like, you know, thousands of people are liking and smiling and doing all the things that social media is famous for. How does one follow you on Facebook? It's just Brandon Weber, right? Is that
so? Brandon Weber, author. Yeah, that's my page. It's Brandon Weber, author. You can look that up. We talk a lot about working people's issues, a lot about labor unions. I think about a third of my audience, it's almost 700,000 fans at this point, and about a third of them are union people. Or you know, are related to or are friends with union people. And we talk about the economy, we talk about politics, and a lot about working people's issues.
Well, what I find, you know, and I think that this is something that's come out in the past decade, is a reminder to the world about the role that labor plays in terms of progressive causes, you know, fighting for working families, and that somehow had gotten lost in the sauce of 10 years ago when public opinion was not on our side. And it has taken, I think, folks like yourself and the smart usage of social media and also the troubled times in which we live for people to say, you know, labor unions really were a good thing and really are a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if we're going back to the 1882 or 1884 when the Labor Day struggle began, they did that because they didn't want to work 12-hour days. They wanted to work 8-hour days. And so, I mean, that now we're today where people work three jobs just to be able to pay rent, right? So we need unions. We need these struggles to make it.
Brandon Weber, thank you very much as always. You will be back, my friend, giving us another reminder of the history of our labor movement.
Thank you, sir.
That's just about all the time we have for this show. I want to thank Mark Torres and Brandon Weber for being with us. And I also want to, this is the last show, I think, of the summer. And as the last show of the summer, you can make the summer last a little bit longer. If you've been dreaming about a Caribbean getaway, the DC-37 Rewards Program, www.dc37rewards.com, is giving away one $2,500 cruise voucher good on Disney, Royal Caribbean, or Celebrity Cruise Lines. The winner applies the $2,500 credit voucher to pay for a Caribbean cruise on the cruise of their choice. To enter to win, you must be a DC-37 member or retiree in good standing, registered at dc37rewards.com by August 30th, 2019. The winner will be drawn at random from all contestants registered on dc37rewards.com before midnight Friday, August 30th, 2019, and the winner will be announced on Monday, September 2nd, 2019. No cash substitution. So again, if you've been dreaming about a Caribbean getaway, DC-37 Rewards is the way to go. Just sign up at dc37rewards.com. I'm Chris Policano. Andrea Minocchio is the engineer. Rudy Orozco is the producer. Until next time, ciao.